I have the honor of starting us off in this year and doing that with Mark, the book of Mark. I think it's one of the most fascinating books in the New Testament. It is a fascinating book because of its rawness, and I get to introduce it to you. You haven't read, I mean, you've certainly looked at it before, read it, but I get to introduce some concepts, and then you'll see them, hopefully, as you read this week, and so I'm happy to introduce that to you. I like the underdog. I don't know about you, but when there's sports teams, I'm not a big football fan, so I have no preference to any team. So when it's Super Bowl time, whoever is the underdog, that's the one that I'm rooting for. I don't know. I've heard that it's a very American thing, but then there's also sticking to your team kind of thing. I don't know about you, but I like to root for the underdog, just the upset of it, right? This person that nobody expected to win rallies, gets itself together, the team, and they win the victory. So I like to root for it, and Mark is just one of those candidates. The Gospel of Matthew has always been the predominant Gospel. Gospel of Luke is amazing. The Gospel of John, that is that theological corpus that is just amazing in the beginning. And Mark has always been relegated to the back burner. The reason is Mark does not have a Sermon on the Mount. And isn't that what we hold kind of as the creed of Christianity, the essence of Christianity? Mark doesn't have it. The story of the Samaritan, the guy that helps the Jew that is traveling to Jericho, is not found in Mark. The big end time epoch of Matthew 24 is only in an abbreviated form in Mark, just a small section of it. Luke is all about the equality of people, especially of Gentiles and Jews, of women and men. Mark does not have any of that. We think of the big parables, right? The prodigal son. Mark doesn't have that. And if we go through this list, we end up saying, what does Mark have? All these things that we say are all these big tenets of Christianity, Mark doesn't have them. All the others have them. Throughout church history, Matthew has been the predominant gospel. That's why it's listed first in the canon. Not necessarily because it was written first, but because it was the most important work for the last almost 2,000 years. Why? It has an incredible Christology. Jesus is just, every nuance of Jesus is elaborated. It has an amazing soteriology. The salvation aspect is very important to Matthew. How do you become saved? That question. That's amazing. Eschatology is really strong in Matthew. All these aspects, it's a very polished piece of work. And if you go into medieval art and all of that, you see Jesus always portrayed as a very polished, very pretty, very amazing, very grand picture of who Jesus is, right? People love this idea of a very polished idea. Mark has nothing of that. Mark is the opposite. And maybe that's why for postmodern people, or even beyond postmodernity, we're already talking about the next step, this is actually the gospel that people might relate to the most. It's not polished. It is gritty. It's raw. It's immersed in a storyline. It doesn't have all kinds of themes and allusions running through it. It's about people and their story. It's all about Jesus. It's all about the disciples. It's all about the antagonists. It's very much about people. Not ideas, not doctrine, not dogmatics. That's not of Mark's concern. It is nitty, gritty, down to earth, it's rough, it's unpolished, it's not finished, it almost seems like, at some places. The one thing that Mark is amazing at is telling stories. Not polished illusions, but stories. And so if you were to imagine who wrote this book, it can only be an old grandfather or a grandmother, the storyteller of the family. That's answering the one important question of what was it like to be with Jesus? I don't know if you've asked your grandparents those questions of, what was Dad like when he was a little boy? I asked my grandmother this, what pranks did my dad play, or when did he get into trouble? I wanted a kind of a dad that was not just this authority figure that told me what to do, but who had some faults of his own as well. So I like those. And my grandmother is in the process. Her eyesight is almost gone completely, but she's writing her story for my children and grandchildren, for them to know this is the story of our past. This is where we come from. I think that's very important to us. Where do we come from? Just this week, I read this report, and you've probably heard that, this British lady that posted a YouTube. I was just dropped off at a store, and I want to know who my parents are. I have loving foster parents that took care of me, but I just want to know, where are my real roots? And if anybody knows anything about my birth or my birth mother or parents, these are the things that I've tried to gather, but I've come to a dead end. We want to know, where do we come from? And Mark is the one that will answer this question. What was it like to be with Jesus? And it's rough. It's gritty. It's a confession. It's a raw confession. That's the book of Mark. It's authentic. It's real. It doesn't show anything polished or pretty. The disciples don't get away very well in the book of Mark. And you will see in all the other Gospels, they'll get it at some point. Or Jesus endows them with special gifts or does something. In the Gospel of Mark, they never get it. They're just the blundering idiots, so to speak, that bumble their way through the storyline. That's the reality. And yet, there's this Jesus. So that's kind of an introduction to it, the raw testimony. And I want to show you this in the very first verse of this book. So I invite you to open your Bibles and just read verse 1. And that's all that I'll be doing with you for the next couple of minutes here. It says here, Mark chapter 1, verse 1. The beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And probably we'd say, yeah, well, what's so special about that, right? We expected that. And yet, it is incredibly, for Mark, this is an amazing testimony in itself. Because the words that he chooses are full of meaning, and he will develop them in the whole gospel. The first one is Jesus Christ. Now we've come to the point, and maybe some people argue even in the later part of the first century, that Jesus Christ just became kind of a name in it of itself. But for Mark, it is not this. This is a very early book. Whether it was the first or not, of the gospel, there's dispute about that. But it was a very early piece, and for Mark, Jesus Christ is not, like Ike Mueller, first and last name. Christ is a title. It is an expression of faith. The Christ, the anointed. This is the Greek equivalent, of course, to that Hebrew word, the Messiah. Jesus, the Messiah. That is already a statement of itself. And then we'll read the second one, the Son of God. And that is also not a historically provable point. Is Jesus the Son of God? That is not his. It is a statement of faith. It is a statement of faith. This is the Son of God. And he will use these words in a very special way. And I just want to show you this overview of the book. The book can roughly be divided into two parts. The first 8 chapters, and it's kind of nice. I looked at the schedule. You'll be reading, and we'll get to next week. We'll get to the second part, starting in chapter 9. Through the end of the book, chapter 16. So this week you'll be reading that first section of the book. It ends with the proclamation, the first part, with the proclamation of Peter to say, "You are the Christ." That is the culmination of the first part of this book. The second part of the book, the first part details all the things that Jesus will do in his ministry in Galilee. The second part is already on his way to Jerusalem. The book is 50-50. 50% of it is Jerusalem, 50% of it is Galilee. Very, very clear-cut kind of picture there. The second part will begin in chapter 8 with this confession of Peter, and then this journey to Jerusalem with the final denial of Peter, the accusation against Jesus and his crucifixion, and then just that little hint of a resurrection. Come on in. So these are the two parts of the book, and it's very interesting how this storyteller, this narrator, this grandfather that is telling these stories will use these words. In fact, if we believe the church fathers, the origin of this book would be Peter, who shared his story with Mark, the John Mark, the apostle, scribe that wrote this down, the follower of Paul. They had some dispute there, and Barnabas and Paul left and divided on terms of Mark here. Mark will add an incredible contribution to the early church. He will write this gospel based on what Peter tells him. The confession of Peter will use this term Christ for the second time only in the book. This is not a standard repetition. Jesus doesn't refer to himself as Christ. He doesn't refer to himself as Son of God. He will always use the term Son of Man. Very specifically, in chapter 8 is only the second occurrence of this word Christ. Peter will say, "You are the Christ," the confession of Christ. And at the very end of the book, in chapter 15, there will be one more confession. A man standing at the cross, a Gentile nonetheless. And he will say, "Surely, truly, this was the Son of God." One person confesses that he's Christ, the other that he's Son of God. That interplay. In the first part of the book, the first half that you'll be looking at, we'll be looking at some people the demons will know. Nobody else knows yet, but the demons know that he is the Son of God. They confess to it. And that culminates in the confession of Peter. And in the second part, Jesus will ascribe himself to be the Christ. A very systematic ordering of the book. First half and second half, all framed by three confessions. The second confession is that of Peter. The third confession is that of the centurion. And the first confession is that of Mark himself. He starts off and says, "This is my confession. Now let me tell the story." And as we see in verse 2, he starts with a prophecy and then he gets into the story. But verse 1 is his personal confession. That's how he starts off. This is not just any story I'm telling you. My personal confession tells you this. And this is going to be the nitty-gritty part of it. This is about belief, about things that are dear to our hearts, not something that is just superficial. If we look at this first half a little more, the demons, we've already said, the demons are the only ones that recognize who Jesus is. The main passage, the main thing that will be talked about in the first 8 chapters is Jesus is in control. That's the important thing. Jesus is in authority and he's the authoritative person over the demons. He's the authoritative person in disputes with the Pharisees. They start right in chapter 1. They already start. Chapter 1, he wastes no time. Mark doesn't tell any story of the narrative or this is how it happened. No, let's cut to the chase. This is the story. Jesus is authoritative over nature, over antagonists, over demons, over temptation, over Satan himself. In the second part, it's not about the authoritative Jesus anymore. It's about Jesus, the suffering servant. And it's a big allusion to Isaiah, chapters 53 and 54 there, 52 and 53. This allusion, Jesus is now the suffering servant. In the first part, it's all about what Jesus does. He has authority. In the second, it is he suffers for us. And already at this point, we can take away some very helpful personal applications that we can do. In the first part, we have all these stories of the feeding of the 5,000, the feeding of the 4,000, the healings that Jesus performs. None of that will happen in the second part. In the second part, we'll have parables and teachings. It's a very different idea that happens there. He'll predict his death in the second part, not in the first part. Jesus is in control. And maybe at the beginning of the semester even, that is helpful to know. Some of you have come here and finances haven't been completely worked out, or you're struggling with the application process. There are issues to be resolved. Maybe the CAF account is drawing to an eye at some point, or there wasn't enough money to put in at the beginning. Jesus is the one that stands above that. He's the one that can feed the 5,000. He can feed you. Maybe you're struggling with temptation. Those are touchy and personal subjects. Yes, come on in. Find a seat. First row, second row, third row, everything is open. Jesus is the one that can help you through it. He went through temptation himself. Maybe it's the Pharisees that are blocking your view of who Jesus is, who Jesus really is. Maybe there's something in your way, maybe other people in your way. And yet Jesus is the one that goes beyond the Pharisees and heals this man on the Sabbath and says, pushing aside the Pharisees, I heal you. Stretch out your hand, you will be healed in the synagogue, contrary to everything that's allowed. If Pharisees are blocking your way, if maybe church politics or things that you hear that are spoken, if people stand in your way, Jesus can transcend that. Hold on to Jesus. Jesus is bigger than people. He is bigger than the devil. He is bigger than your personal problems. That is the Jesus of the first half of Mark. And maybe we'll leave it at that time for this half, and the next time we'll look at the second half of this book. But the encouragement that we have already is that Jesus will heal us, he'll be there for us. And as you read these first 8 chapters, ask especially these questions, and these are very specific questions for Mark. Look for some keywords, for example, immediately. For Mark, everything is always immediately. It happens quickly. There's energy, there's dynamics. Something is happening. The second thing, if you can compare, you maybe have a Bible program or something, Mark is usually telling things in the present tense, not the past tense. Our translations put it into past tense because for us in English it just makes more sense that way. But it's that dynamics. It's still alive. It's still present with us. Jesus speaks. He didn't speak. He still speaks. So compare different translations if you want to, and you'll get some of that feeling of it. And finally, watch for how people and the stories of people are developed. What does Mark tell you about a person? What does Mark tell you about Jesus? How he develops his characters? This is in English literature, we talk about character development. How he develops his characters is uncanny. None of the other Gospels have this. This is his contribution to it. So, maybe that's an introduction to this book.
Thank you so much. I think what we'll do now, since we have not read this yet, or at least we'll all have